Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to the Inner Conclave of Nerdom, aka another episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Diz. I am your pop culture / sports nerd. Ali?
I'm Ali, your classic nerd of the group.
And I'm V, your comic book nerd.
Are you wearing cologne today?
I am. No. Why?
Someone's cologne is over. Are you wearing cologne?
I don't wear cologne.
Well, maybe it's my own cologne. That's probably your Someone's cologne is overpowering.
It must be your upper lip.
No. That's like, no, actually, I'm not.
It smells like old man cologne, too, so it can't be me. Nope.
It might be my deodorant. I resprayed my deodorant before coming in here.
Oh, that's what it was then.
Possibly.
I have a very sensitive nose.
It's like a German deodorant. Like my aunt gave it to me.
Oh yeah, summer. Yeah, it's old man deodorant. Yeah. I could smell it.
Because I didn't want to roll it on again. Because it's weird. You can't roll on deodorant twice. So like I went.
No, because you're rolling deodorant on top of deodorant.
Right. So I did a little spray.
It's a weird combo. Yeah, I can smell. I have a very delicate. I have a big nose.
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
And it's good for picking up scents.
Yeah, no, you know.
It's also why I don't do really pungent foods. If you've ever known, can't do seafoods and stuff. It's 99% is the smell.
That's not bullshit.
It is. It's the smell for me. Like seafood. It's not the taste of seafood. Like I've had shrimp. There's nothing bad with shrimp. It's kind of rubbery.
No, it's lobster. Lobster you found lobster. Rubber.
No, but shrimp is also kind of weird. It tastes like chicken to me with just a slight textural.
I don't know.
There's nothing in seafood, the taste of seafood, there's nothing about the taste.
I thought you made a deal with Poseidon. Bad.
There is a deal there. But it's also it's the smell. It's too strong of a smell for me. I'm like, oh.
No. But then how do you like cheeses?
I don't like strong smelling cheeses.
Yeah, he doesn't eat. He eats mild cheeses.
I do Goudas. I do cheddars.
Does Gouda have a strong smell?
Give me a good mozzarella.
Gouda, not so much.
Mozzarella doesn't.
Gouda has a, if you get smoked Gouda, it smells smoky.
I don't know. Do you like blue cheese?
I hate blue cheese. Oh, yeah. Any of the rotting cheeses, any of the heavy cheeses. The only stinky cheese I can do is Pecorino Romano or Parmesan.
You don't do that?
They're kind of stinky.
What was that cheese you were telling us about stinky. With the
maggots? Katsumarzu.
Katsumarzu.
Definitely not.
You won't eat none of that Katsumarzu bullshit?
No.
Yeah, I actually know because, you're not really adventurous with the cheeses either.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I may enjoy cheeses, but it's like a small selection that I enjoy in copious amounts.
V, I've been thinking about it because we're talking about food, but, I've been watching a lot of these, BuzzFeed, food videos.
They're fun to watch.
Did you hear that SourceFed got canceled?
What's a SourceFed?
You don't know what SourceFed is?
You don't know what SourceFed is?
On YouTube?
No.
It's BuzzFeed smarter, nerdier cousin. It was started by Philip DeFranco.
No.
Philip DeFranco's company was SourceFed, and then he sold it. Whatever, I think Disney maybe.
Oh wow,
I'm not sure, but it's been around for a while, and it's been struggling.
Mm-hmm.
It's been declining over the years. It's a massive product. There's SourceFed, SourceFed Nerd, all sorts of different, and it just shut down. That's a lot of people unemployed.
Oh, sure.
A lot of YouTubers that are now unemployed.
That sucks.
Yeah, SourceFed was very popular. They also got really big in 2016 because they reported that Google was filtering the Hillary Clinton searches.
Oh. Wait, they did. They were?
They were. They, no, they didn't.
Yeah, but they
were. Google
weren't.
Came out against it. But SourceFed kind of supposedly broke the news, and then they got a lot of pushback on it.
Mm. Yeah, it's when you look at kind of the bigger companies that are getting into that game, though, AJ Plus being a big one, right?
Yeah.
AJ Plus's stream shut down.
Yeah.
The U.S. stream is gone.
Yeah, but they do a lot of little short videos on Facebook. Yeah,
but AJ stream is gone.
Hmm.
Yeah, the U.S.
But,
version.
But it's even then, those ones were kind of, they kind of pushed SourceFed out a little bit with their news stuff. Because, the actual sources of AJ Plus are a lot more reliable. Trustworthy, right? And and even then, they have a really hard time of keeping up, right? They can't because it's just there's no money in it. So
their AJ Plus has money, right? It's Qatari fund.
Yeah.
Hey, so I know you're not big on pungent cheeses and foods, but are you big on things like lingua? Would you eat tongue? Tongue taco, beef tongue tacos.
I don't do tongue.
No,
I like lingua.
Lingua's good, dude.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I fucks with some beef tongue taco.
Mm-mm.
You like El Pastor? I feel like you'd be an El Pastor.
I don't
Pastor
do
fan.
A lot of those weird.
Yeah,
meat,
it's my
weird
favorite.
Meats.
Yeah, El Pastor is actually brought over by the Turks,
by the Lebanese actually. The
Lebanese.
Yeah. So when the Lebanese immigrated to Mexico, because the way they did their kebabs, so they would spin it on the little wheel.
Yeah.
So they'd cut that shit.
So now El Pastor does the same thing, but they use pineapple.
Yeah, they use pineapple at the top. To season it, and then they use marinated pork instead of marinated beef.
Yeah, I don't do weird meat. I'm also not part of the the French eat thyroid and shit.
No,
mm-mm.
But being brown.
kidneys is the other thing was very big.
Did you ever do
liver chicken livers were very big.
Bone marrow when we were kids.
Bone marrow is alright.
It's not bad.
But it's do you remember liver? Jagar.
I mean, I probably ate it as a kid.
Yeah, Jagar was pretty popular.
I like cow belly.
Yeah. I could never get behind. Like, I tried eating liver as a kid, chicken livers. I couldn't. Okay, it's that irony flavor, and it's like the texture's all chalky. Like, I could never get behind it. It killed me.
They would sneak it in, like among chicken and other stuff. Yeah. What is that?
And that's the weird thing, because I like pâtés. I like foie. Like, I eat all these other things, but like, I can't, for whatever reason, chicken livers, I could never get behind.
What's a foie?
Foie gras.
What does that mean?
So that's like a goose, uh-huh. and they would like overfeed it, and it would get a really fatty liver. Yeah, and then they would, and then when you die, it's just like, it's just like a big, it's almost like a butter. Like, it's just so much fat in it, so it's just condensed fat, right, of a goose. It's nice. It is really super buttery and fatty, and it goes really well with like really jammy fruits. So like fruit compotes, blackberries, blueberries that have been stewed down or reduced.
Okay.
Right, it's really good, but it's also like a number. It was banned in the States for a little while because of the way that they treated the goose, right? Because they literally overfeed it to the point where it would eat itself to death.
That's not good.
It's a Saturday night.
Yeah, and then that's the politics of food, though. Now, within the past year or two, it went from being outlawed to being back again.
Okay,
right. So it's kind of
palm oil was out, like big taboo for a while.
Nutella.
Yeah,
Nutella has palm oil in it.
It was taboo for a while.
Yeah.
Then it was back. Now it's taboo again.
Yeah.
Yeah. The turnover on palm oil was fast, though.
Like a couple years.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't one of those things where
you couldn't find palm oil anywhere. You had to order it online.
Yeah.
And because then
it was killing the orangutans.
Then it showed up again. All of a sudden, Farm to Market has it.
Yeah.
What is this fucking place over here?
Whole Foods
has it.
Trader Joe's has it. Yeah.
All of them had it, right? And then again, all of a sudden, there's some clip went viral.
Because it gives you cancer.
No, it was not just it's cancer stuff, but it's also another clip went viral showing orangutans.
Oh shit!
And their, you know, their home was being destroyed, that was it. People are like, "Fuck palm oil."
Did Bibi Majan ever try to make you eat Mars?
Yeah.
Our grandma's sister would literally try to like force us to eat weird shit by telling us those other things, and then after we take a bite and not like it, she'd be like, "Well, you just ate brain." I'm like, "Why? Why would you do that to me?"
She's also a horribly messy cook.
Yeah.
She made a soup once for us. An osh is a soup, but it's with noodles in it, right?
Yeah.
So it's more aligned to the Japanese or Asian soups than it is American soups or Western soups, which are really brothy.
Yeah.
Right?
Cream-based.
Or cream-based, whereas Afghan soups are noodle-based. Right?
Noodle and then, like, meats.
Vegetables and meats and whatnot, right?
It's like a stew.
So remember, I was eating one of them, and I couldn't chew one.
Ooh,
the hell is this? I pull it out. It's a rubber band.
Oh, hey.
It was a rubber band from the frozen vegetables.
Ah.
That she had apparently, she had kept them wrapped up with a rubber band, and then when she poured it out, she just tossed the rubber band.
She's like, it's so much more convenient this way.
Yeah, I know.
Put it in there.
But if you ever watched her cook, you'd never eat again.
Yeah.
Because she was like not just because she was dirty. Yeah. She was actually clean.
Yeah.
But it's like she would throw anything in there with no regard for what it actually was.
Oh, yeah.
So Zaid's probably going to listen to this, and I have a running joke with Zaid that his grandmother cooks with her feet.
That's so rude.
Right? I'm like, Zaid, bro, I can't eat your grandma's food. He's like, why? Like, she cooks with her feet. What do you mean? I'm like, bro, she spends all day long on her fucking dust base.
That's so rude. Her cooking is, she's actually a good cook. It's just,
she's not bad.
A messy cook is the only way I can describe it. Like, she's the type of person that'll throw ranch into something and for no reason other than it looked like it would fit there.
Like, your mom does that shit too, bro.
My mom doesn't do that. My mom is a sauce person, though. She
random stuff in the sauces.
She doesn't put random stuff in, but she makes weird sauces because she's Afghan. And so she thinks, like, these sauces are great. And I'm like, no, it just tastes like weird Afghan seasoning.
Your mom makes random stuff.
You gotta be careful because if you muddle the pool too much, it all ends up being the same.
My mom makes, like, this, like, all her chickens end up the same color. Yellow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she put so much fucking turmeric in it. I'm like, Mom, this isn't a curry. It's chicken. It's chicken soup. Why the fuck am I having a curry with this? She's like, I put turmeric in it. I'm like, why? Who asked you to? Not me.
Good for you.
So my mom's not like Bibi Manjan in that sense, but my mom does, she has a certain flavor palette, which is very Middle Eastern, Afghan, Indian, and she always goes for that, no matter what she's making. And I'm like, it's fried chicken. Like, turmeric doesn't go there.
Although it's,
you know what I mean.
That's, you know, index. There's a lot of fish and chips places in the UK now. They incorporate curry powder.
They do,
and, you know,
they
into do. Their into their fish and chips now. And you know, it actually makes a world of difference.
Their the curry back. Has become huge in the UK.
Yeah,
commonly, are you up for a curry? But they call a lot of things curry.
Yeah.
They've not. There's a couple places I've been to. We'll just say up north.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where they're like, up for a curry? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm down for a curry. And I'm like, this is gravy.
Yeah.
This isn't curry.
What does that mean? Is he talking about Canada?
Up for a curry. Like, are you up to go get some curry?
No, I know what you meant, but you said up north, motherfucker. What do you mean?
Up Canada? Up north in north of England.
Oh. Oh, yeah, you'd be going on these secret trips to like Hogwarts and shit. I don't know about you.
North of England is like the south of America, kind of. It's more rural.
You son of a bitch, bro. So I'm sitting there talking shit about Newt Gingrich, and I'm like, yeah, fuck Trump and Newt. And he's like, Scamander? Right? And like, I was like,
I had a nerd moment.
As I sent it, I knew someone was going to say Scamander, but I didn't peg it for you.
Right? To be fair, though, you know, the two Newts, there is one that we definitely like talking about, and there's one that we definitely don't like talking about.
Scamander is the better one.
I've read the other Newt's thesis.
Oh, yeah, where it was like he was justifying the genocide, right?
Justified. One of, like, the worst, the first modern genocide, which unfortunately is never talked about. There's a genocide of the African Congolese by the Germans, by King Leopold.
Oh, shit. I thought you were talking about the Armenian genocide.
No, that's the second genocide.
Okay.
The first genocide of the modern world is in Africa.
Okay.
And it's bigger than the Holocaust.
For real?
It's bigger than the Holocaust.
Holy shit.
It's 16 to 20 million.
Holy shit.
It's a massive genocide.
How come this is not talked about?
Eurocentric history, right?
Jews run Hollywood.
No, it's about a Eurocentric worldview, right? So why isn't the Armenian genocide talked about? In fact, the Armenian genocide is even pushed back against.
The Turks run Hollywood.
Right? Actually, they just released a movie.
The Young Turks.
The Ottoman Lieutenant or some shit like that, and it was like universally panned as Turkish propaganda. Because they keep trying that shit. They keep like trying
But they made a movie about it?
They made a movie in which the Armenian genocide is basically denied.
Okay.
It's like, it didn't really happen. So there's this war going on, and they just completely kind of overshadow.
They did that. They did the FIFA movie about Sepp Blatter.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, this was a year ago, and it was like, they released in U.S. theaters, and they had a total U.S., like, it was a total count of people that actually watched in the theater was, like, 2,500 people.
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, it was universally, it was Clive Owen, I think, was in it. He was playing Sepp Blatter, but, like.
What?
It was considered the worst movie, like, 2016.
There is a Turkish film industry.
There is?
It's not a good one.
Yeah. I think there's a film industry in almost any culture.
Yeah, I've seen some Afghan films.
Yeah, that's not a real film
industry. Yeah, your uncle Fataz.
That's not, he's your uncle.
He's more related to you than he is me now.
I don't know what you're talking about. Not by blood.
Through other things.
But it's like,
what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Through your mother, B.
We'll explain later.
No. So, there is an Afghan film industry. It's not actually a film industry, though.
Yeah, it's just garbage.
It's people filming things on camcorders and shit.
Yeah.
There's an Iranian film industry, which is actually quite robust.
Yeah, they won Oscars.
Yeah, they've done a great job. Yeah. The Turkish industry, not so much, because they keep trying to do the same thing over and over again. denial of the Armenian genocide.
wait, hold on.
There used to be a Big Alice row at UCLA over this. Did I ever tell you about this?
No.
A little bit before my time. It was between the professor of Ottoman history, who was... Basically, the chair was funded by the Turkish government, and the chair of the Armenian studies, which was Richard Hovhannissian.
Oh, not the Kardashians.
And the Armenians and the Turks were like an outright war at UCLA. UCLA was basically a war zone. The Turkish professor's home got bombed.
What? Like
firebombed. They didn't blow up, but they fucked up his door.
The Armenians did this?
The Armenians did it because he denied the Armenian genocide.
Son of a bitch. No. The best trailer I have ever seen for a foreign movie is like the Russian version of the Avengers. They have like a bear man type thing.
What was that?
I don't know, but
it's not Avengers. What is that?
It's the Russian Avengers.
There's like, they have special powers. There's the bear man.
Yeah.
I saw that.
There's like the Black Widow character.
What was that? I didn't know what it was.
But I don't know, but it's the shit.
I didn't know if it was like a game trailer at first. Because it's CGI. It's very gamey.
Okay. Yeah,
for all of our listeners, if you have a chance, fucking Google Russian Avengers trailer.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what it was. I thought it was first of all, it's also really long.
Yeah, it's like a 4-minute long trailer.
It's a long ass trailer,
but it looks dope as shit. And
the funny thing is, like, you know, trailers like cut scenes.
Yeah,
this is the whole story. it's got a plot. It's got a climax.
The bear man
is a resolution.
The bear man's fighting like a tank.
And there's like a guy that controls stones or rocks. Yeah,
I don't know. There's like a Thor-like character.
There's an earthbender in there.
There's an earthbender in there. He's got a beard.
There's an Iron Man-type character in it, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that movie was. I thought it was a novel that they had adopted.
Right? No, dude, that shit looks awesome.
Or a game that they were coming out with, but apparently it's a movie.
Like, I've never wanted to be Russian so bad. Besides now, because I guess Russia's influencing America so much in our politics.
Yeah, and you protest the government, you get killed.
Yeah, but it's true.
Yeah, maybe, you know, there's that whole thing about...
You guys have been following how many high-ranking Russian people have been dropping dead?
Yeah.
Like, left and right.
And Putin's shameless about it. He's just like,
if they die,
it wasn't me.
he dies.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the clashing with protesters and everything, right? Like, you know, that's going on there.
Like, literally last week, a Russian ambassador got killed. There's a Russian ambassador who's been killed. Six high-ranking Russians have been killed. One who was coming to testify against Putin got killed the day before he had to show up to testify in court. Like, it's not even... They're not even good at covering it up.
I know, they're just shameless about it.
They're straight out of a fucking James Bond movie.
I know.
Or a Jason Bourne flick.
Yeah, no, it's...
Speaking of trailers, did you guys see the Avengers one?
The Avengers trailer.
Avengers. Not the Avengers. What the fuck?
Justice League?
Justice League. That's
God. That's too different.
I don't like the Justice League, to be honest with you.
You know, I wasn't all that impressed with it. It was fine.
It was all right.
But it's at the same time, it's just... We've learned so badly.
Aquaman pretty badass.
That's the thing. Like, I really like Jason Momoa, right? Yeah. I'm a really big fan of his.
He's playing Aquaman vis-a-vis Khal Drogo.
Yeah, he's the Khal Aquaman, right?
Yeah, like Khal Aquaman.
You know, he's the seahorse lord now. He's the seahorse lord.
Right. He's fucking Roman Reigns.
Because Aquaman's kind of lame.
Yeah, what the fuck does Aquaman really do?
He's actually kind of badass once you get to know what he does.
Yeah.
He starts off as lame, but they develop him pretty well.
People make fun of him, but it's honestly, but it's unfair. It's really unfair.
In the New 52, there's like a alternate timeline, you know, Flash does something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speed Force or some shit like
that? Flashpoint.
I don't know. Is it called Flashpoint Paradox?
It's like when he goes back and he saves his mom.
Yeah, when he goes back and saves his mom and changes the timeline. It's like Aquaman's at war with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And Aquaman's like committed like genocide.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, he's like, you don't mess with... He's actually very dangerous. He's pretty powerful.
The King of Atlantis.
But he's like, he started off lame. But even in his badass form, he's still kind of Aquaman.
Yeah.
It's not Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa is playing him like a... barbarian savage type.
Yeah, which I think is like a good idea.
Bite your ear.
Yeah.
Looking dude.
He's I think his depiction is actually pretty cool. Cyborgs, I'm like, okay, they didn't do much with him.
No, but he's really CGI looking.
Yeah, and then obviously Wonder Woman's great. Yeah. Batman's fine, right?
Gail Gadot.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's just...
What do you think of Ezra Miller as Flash?
Flash, I don't
really, I'm not so sure.
It's hard for me because they did such a good job with Grant Gustin. It's hard for me to picture someone who isn't Grant Gustin. Yeah,
Ezra
Flash,
Miller
right?
is kind of a little bit more emo.
He's not as whimsical as Grant Gustin.
He is, but he's a different... He's a dark whimsy. Yeah.
The idea, because Snyder didn't want a guy like Gustin because he thought it was too light, right? So Snyder wanted...
Yeah, but Flash is a bit whimsical.
Yeah, even like in like the Justice League cartoons and stuff.
He's snarky, right? Yeah. Like he has that weird...
Ezra Miller has this weird kind of alternative, I don't fit in, quirky.
He was in Fantastic Beasts, right? Yeah. He was the guy with the bulk.
He's a great actor, don't get me wrong. Ezra Miller is actually a fantastic actor. Yeah. Perks of a Wallflower.
Yeah, he was great in that.
But he plays kind of a... And this is going to sound offensive, but maybe you'll understand what I'm saying. Like almost Asperger-y type
of wit.
Yeah, I know.
It's look in his face.
You know what I mean by that? But like, it's like he's an Abed type of humor. Like he's funny, but he's fun. He's not cracking jokes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like this kind of observational humor from someone who's on the outside.
Yeah. Almost like a Sheldon.
A little bit like a Sheldon. Yeah. He you know what he represents to me? He represents the Tumblr crowd.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
Right?
Well,
they're meme people. That's what it represents.
I can see almost a little bit of Carl Pilkington in him a little bit too. Not so stupid, but like there's like a weird like, you know, you observe him and you're like you're there's something oddly simple about you, but you're into what you're into, right? Like
he's quite intelligent.
Yeah.
Ezra?
Yeah, Ezra's very smart.
Yeah.
Extremely smart. So but his humor is just, it's not Grant Gustin's humor is different, right? Yeah. It's a little bit more charismatic.
Gustin's boyish,
he's
more right?
Charming. Yeah, he's, more, yeah, he's definitely got a better boyish
charm. He sings like an angel. Yeah. I remember on Glee.
He's on Glee. I always forget that.
But he was evil on Glee.
He was evil.
Bad guy on Glee. Very bad man.
Very bad. Sad.
Yeah.
I mean, he was bad, but I still enjoyed his voice, and I still enjoyed their rendition.
I was one of the few people that didn't get into the Glee shit.
Oh, I watched like the first few.
I
mean, seasons.
I like Glee in general, like the principle of singing with your
like the acapella groups.
Yeah,
I like Glee's not real Glee because
Glee's not acapella. It's just them singing.
Yeah, but they did a great rendition of Teenage Dream.
Glee also tends to be a male, homosocial space.
Yeah.
Done in Ivy Leagues. It's opened up now. It has like golf clubs.
Well, fucking
that movie Pitch Perfect was all about, right?
Glee is generally predominantly male, and it's only your
Andy voice. Was part of an acapella group called Here Comes Treble from The Office. Rootin' tootin' to do. But we're talking about boyish charm, and we'd be remiss to not bring up the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer.
Of all the people to bring up Spider-Man, you were the one.
Hey, listen.
I've never understood why you make his name Jewish.
Guys, listen. Here's the thing, all right? I may have turned over a new leaf when it comes to the Spider-Man. I really like this Tom Holland guy. I think he's a better Brit than Andrew Garfield that's playing Spider-Man. Mm. I really hate Tobey Maguire with a passion.
You think he's a better what?
A better Brit actor playing him than James Garfield.
I like James Garfield. I like the more edgier.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like James Garfield.
James Garfield is a better Spider-Man.
No, I don't like him.
Tom Holland is a better Peter Parker.
I like Tom Holland. Tom Holland is whimsical. He's charismatic. He's making me enjoy watching these trailers.
He's a bit young for me.
I mean, Spider-Man's supposed to be like 16.
Spider-Man is in
high school.
Ending high school.
He's a junior in high school, 16, 17. So, I mean, he's got that boyish charm. This Tom Holland.
Yeah, I like the modern, because for me, Garfield modernized him.
See, I think I'm still like hungover from Spider-Man 3. Like,
no, Tobey Maguire was the worst Spider-Man of all time.
Yeah, I hate Tobey Maguire. I refuse to watch
Seabiscuit. Tobey Maguire basically plays Tobey Maguire.
What other
in every movie.
What other movies has he been in? Seabiscuit?
And he's playing Tobey Maguire in it.
Pleasantville, he was Tobey Maguire.
And he plays a kind of pleasant, bug-eyed.
Yeah. Even Gatsby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was Gatsby.
And he does this weird, like, have you ever noticed, like, he does this thin-lipped shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That little meme of him. I don't like that.
He also, the way he always speaks the same tone over and over.
He's very weird. He's close friends with Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of actors that play themselves, but they play themselves so well that you're like, okay, there's roles for them. Robert Downey Jr. doesn't, like, people talk about how he's a great actor. He's a great actor because he plays himself well.
Yeah. Well, no, he did a different role in Tropic Thunder, and I enjoy that.
Or with Chaplin.
Yeah, Chaplin.
Chaplin was
but good. That's his magnum opus, right?
Before his comeback years,
he
did some great stuff. It's like in his youth.
Oh, yeah.
He did brilliant stuff.
What was that? Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff.
Great in that.
But like since his comeback, he plays Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And that's fine, but he plays it so well that there are roles for him to play.
Yeah, it makes sense. Right? So, yeah, I mean, you have actors like that.
Right? We talked Sherlock about Holmes. He's playing Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Well, we said that last week. We said Denzel plays Denzel.
But Tobey Maguire is just so bad.
Yeah.
He's not even good at playing himself.
Well, it's the same as what's his face? Freaking meta guy.
Meta?
James Franco. James Franco plays Franco.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched Why Him, and like I didn't really enjoy it too much.
Franco plays Franco.
Yeah. Franco, he can't do anything else.
His brother is a marginally better actor than he is.
I know.
And Dave Franco.
Dave Franco.
And
Dave
also Franco married to the beautiful Alison Brie.
Really?
Yeah. Lucky bastard.
Good for him.
From 21 Jump Street.
No, that's Brie Larson.
One's Allison Brie?
From Community.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Annie from Community.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah.
She's gorgeous.
I told you, right?
She's one of my nerd crushes.
Do you remember my theory from a few years ago? If you have Brie in your name, you're hot. Automatically. Your friend Brie, Allison Brie.
Yeah, Brie's attractive.
Brie Olsen, the porn star.
I don't know Brie Olsen, the porn star.
V knows Brie Olsen, the porn star.
No, Brie's also attractive.
And then the other.
No, Brie. I've met a couple of unattractive Brie's.
I haven't. But what are we saying? I don't know. The Spider-Man trailer, it was actually really good.
It was very action-packed.
Yeah.
Very funny.
You see a little bit more.
My only pet peeve with it is like it's Robert Downey Jr. has become ubiquitous in Marvel. And I guess in many ways, maybe he's replacing Agent, whatever the fuck his face is called. Coulson. Agent Coulson as the link connecting all the Marvel movies together. Because Agent Coulson was the link.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he showed up in everything.
Whereas now it's Robert Downey Jr. But it's like it's gotten to the point where it's like he's in everything. And obviously it's down to good negotiating on behalf of his fucking
agent
because he's making bank. But it's like that's what Civil War was. Civil War basically transformed what was fundamentally meant to be a Captain America movie into a Captain America and Robert Downey Jr.
Did you watch Civil War yet?
I watched pieces of it.
You son of a bitch. It was a great movie.
It's a Captain America movie. All I need to know is the plot. Oh, Black Widow's on one side, but is she? Was I wrong? Yeah. Tell me I'm wrong.
No.
Yep.
They really love doing this thing where it's like she's promiscuous in every part of her life, isn't she? It's kind of a weird thing.
And not quite sure who she's really with. See, like I could literally tell you the plot. I haven't seen the movie. I could tell you what happened.
But to be fair, that's
why I don't watch Captain America movies.
To be fair, though, she's like that. They depict her that way in every single movie,
That's true. Since Iron Man 2.
Tony Stark has some type of breakdown because somebody hurt his family or his friends.
Yep.
He has an emotional break.
It happened twice.
See? I know. It's every movie. First it was happy, right? I'm coming for you, Mandarin. Right? This one, it's got to be somebody else.
Yeah.
Like someone tickled Vision's ass or something.
You said you saw a new Transformers trailer. I haven't seen
it. I did. I saw a new...
Damn, they're still making that shit?
Yeah. Michael Bay movie. The Last Knight.
Is that what it's called?
It's night like a medieval night, isn't it?
Knight. Knight. I don't know how I feel about this because, one, I hate Michael Bay.
Optimus Prime become bad in this one?
I don't know. I think he's dead.
I think he does become bad.
Yeah, there's some kind of primes. There's like a battle of the primes or some shit.
I don't know if he's bad. I don't know. What fascinates me about... Look, I can give you no content.
Marky Mark's in it.
I can give you no content.
No?
I don't know who Marky Mark even is.
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
It's Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think he's in there.
It's a good vibration.
I saw some meathead. Must have been him.
It's Mark Wahlberg.
Who also plays Mark Wahlberg and everything.
I think Josh Duhamel and Tyson.
Look, let me put it this way. I don't know anything about the movie coming out.
Okay.
I know that it's called Last Knight.
Last Knight.
But the thing that fascinates me is that it's got like the social justice-y element to it.
Ooh, SJW.
It's got a young girl and she's like, somebody told me I throw like a girl. So I threw like a girl. And shows her like throwing a grenade. They said I ran like a girl. So I ran like a girl. Shows her running from Transformers. Said I fought like a girl. So I fought like it's her like on a Gatling gun. I don't know. I threw in the Gatling gun because I thought it would be it's fitting.
It may not even be there.
I don't think there is a Gatling gun, in fact.
God damn it.
Most movies can be improved by a Gatling gun, in my opinion. I'm just saying, you know, Love Actually, throwing a Gatling gun.
This is fucking Ash versus Evil Dead, bro. You're like,
No, I've always been quite fond of the Gatling gun because, like, if you're going to go maniacal. Mm-hmm. There's like you can't quite do it with a shotgun. You can't quite do it with a handgun.
But
you
shit.
Can do it with a gat. Like if you're gonna go maniacal evil, there's something
wonderful. That's true because it's almost as if you're like grinding flesh while you're doing it, right?
There's
like,
something quite satisfying about it. If I ever go crazy, look for
Gatling gun. Thing is, though, I mean,
check my Amazon history.
Yeah. Can't you only just fire in a straight line with a Gatling gun? You need someone to like drive a car while you're doing it.
Yeah,
listen, the Second Amendment allows you to have one of those.
Can you legally own a Gatling gun?
I don't know. You can.
No.
Why not? What's the Second Amendment? If I want to hunt with a Gatling
gun. Can someone look this up for us?
Yeah.
I can't. I'm already on watch list. If I looked up, can you buy a Gatling gun? I'd literally be arrested tomorrow.
Wait. We have to preface in. If you're brown or black, don't look.
Don't do this.
Yeah. We need one of our white listeners.
Can one of our white listeners tell us?
You won't be on any FBI watch list.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, they'll just think.
In fact, the program that was meant to track white supremacists and white terrorists completely got demolished. Yeah, you're good.
You're completely good.
You're good. So go ahead and look it up for us. Let us know. This is clearly for academic reasons. I have no intentions, dear Homeland Security. I want to state that I have no intentions of buying a Gatling gun.
Yeah.
This is for purely academic purposes.
Also, in the text I sent to Ali earlier saying that I wanted to euthanize old white men and women, it wasn't serious.
Clearly
was
a joke.
I was being facetious.
Context.
Don't arrest me for saying this.
Listen, yes. Okay. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Oh, don't say that. No.
Wait, what did I say?
If the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
I didn't say that.
just yell satire before you say any make any statements.
Satire.
So what was I talking about? Transformers, right.
Yeah. Well, that's weird because Michael Bay, characteristically, has always been about guns, women.
He's a misogynistic
and like,
pig.
Yeah, right? It's always been like Megan Fox, slow motion Megan Fox.
The gaze of the...
that is something else.
Yeah, I knew you were going to rank it.
I went somewhere
the
else.
The gaze of the camera of Michael Bay is a 13-year-old boy.
It's a lens flare.
No, it's called the gaze.
I know.
But the gaze, the framing, right? It's a 13-year-old boy, right? It's slow motion running,
yeah.
Explosion in the background, boobs bouncing.
Yeah, Lincoln American Park. Flags, too, right? All and over the place.
American flags being woven around.
Yeah. Lincoln Park music
that's,
in the background.
That's always, yeah, right? Right? Lose control.
Yeah. It's farewell. I don't know. I can't do Linkin Park.
Linkin Park song titles always sound like notes from a therapist. Losing control.
Yeah.
Falling into the deep. Like, I don't even know if those are real
crawling
songs.
Crawling in my skin.
Crawling in. It's like, I'm not sure those are actual real songs.
Or it sounds like a 13-year-old trying to write poetry.
Yeah, it's really bad. Linkin Park is universally hated, but everybody listens to it secretly. Don't lie.
Really? I love it.
That's true, man. It's the same thing with the whole Billy Ray Cyrus thing in like the 80s, right? It's
all
like,
hates them, but he listens to it.
Everyone may make fun of them.
It's not like
right?
Nickelback, which is like people like legit hate Nickelback. People
Nickelback's not that bad, bro.
People hate Linkin Park, but like deep down. It reminds them of their middle school years and their high school years.
It's not, no, believe me, it's not like one person bought all those billions of albums from Linkin Park, you know?
I may have bought some Linkin Park albums. I'm probably going to listen to Linkin Park, but
I guess there's a very typical Michael Bay perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's quite horrific. It's terrible, right? Mm-hmm. Shitty, not particularly well thought out. But there's his adopting of this like female empowerment and social justice message is something that I've been watching quite fascinating that companies are doing.
What?
Corporations are doing it now. It's like McDonald's, they had their launch and they're like a progressive company for the future.
Oh yeah, because they want to target us millennials.
Yeah, Starbucks. Yeah, right? Starbucks is super progressive.
Yeah,
right?
Fuck these baby boomers. Start like tailoring your stuff to me.
So it's like it fascinates me that we have like we've entered into the era. You know, we're in like the weird surreal stage of late stage capitalism when Michael Bay
is a feminist.
Is a feminist.
When
Bay is like, throw like a girl, hell yeah.
We're on
female
you,
empowerment.
We're on to you, Michael. We will not watch Transformers.
But you know what? Because it's marketable. You can now, right? He's trying to tap into the brave demographic.
Are they going
to
put like black people in his movies finally?
I don't know. But I think
Tyrese Gibson is the only black man.
I think he's still white feminism. Like he's like, yes, women. But all black people still speak urban speak.
Yeah, or these cars.
These cars.
The cars will speak urban speak.
And they're not even urban speak. Yeah, it's just offensive.
And they got gold.
It's not even like Ebonics. It's just like, what? It's like what? It's what white people think Ebonics sounds like.
And they got like gold teeth and shit.
Yeah. It's really, it's quite horrible.
I don't know, man.
And then, of course, I just wanted to say that about Michael Bay. I didn't even watch the trailer. Yeah. I just heard, I was listening to it.
is that Shia LaBeouf guy in there?
Shia LaBeouf is not in it.
I don't know. You guys were really pissed like a couple days ago or today.
Yeah, Death Note.
Yeah, like I don't understand.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because I mean, when I went to WonderCon with you a few years ago, I think there was like someone like cosplaying as one of the people.
So
easy to do.
There was a makeup. There was basically a makeup tutorial place, and they were doing the death spirit, right? They were doing
the Shinigamis. Okay.
Yeah, but they...
I was about to say, because they're cosplaying as Light or L. It's just
the guys on stilts, skinny down on stilts with the really long prosthetic arms, and his face was actually perfectly made up to look exactly like the character.
So Death Note is...
I never watched this.
...is an anime and a manga that is kind of a cult classic, to be honest with you.
Okay.
People love it. It's one of those, because I like anime.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been able to get into it, unfortunately, because I just don't have time. Like when you're writing papers and you got deadlines and shit and you're teaching, you just don't have time to get into it.
Yeah, because you have to pay attention. You can't just have it on.
Like if I could, it would be the one hobby I'd like to pick up, right? But the one anime, there are some animes that I've seen over my lifetime, right? The Princess Mononoke, etc. But the one anime that I have managed to watch some of is Death Note, I liked it.
Is it like a series or is it like
so?
One?
Death Note is the story of a young schoolboy named Light,
okay,
who finds a notebook called Death Note. It's basically given to him by these bored gods of the dead known as the Shinigami, and in it, any person's name you write down with time. They will die.
Well, everyone dies.
But you could say, like, Diz, I want him to die at 10:36. And in 10:36, you would die.
Didn't I see that on a legal pad somewhere in your apartment? Oh, like,
Oh, hey, man. Don't kill me. I have a lot of life to live.
So the story is about this kid who finds this power that he can kill anyone, anywhere, at any time.
Huh.
Just by writing their name down.
Oh, this would be a terrible thing to give to me when I'm mad.
Well, here's the thing. He's a fucking high school kid.
Oh, shit.
He's a schoolboy. And a perfectionist who thinks he's super smart. And he is super smart. So he creates this persona known as Kira.
Who the fuck would give him a little Death Note?
Yeah, it's like giving me a Death Note. And so what Kira, his persona, basically does is he starts to purge the prisons of...
child molesters?
Of criminals. Oh, okay. Kills them. And what he's trying to do is create a perfect society.
Utopia. You would.
He is. He goes, I am the new god at one point. And so they bring in this like super detective known as L. And L is strange as fuck. He sits crouched on a chair. He eats all sorts of sugar. He talks really weird. To find who Kira is. And that's what the story is. It's this tension between this schoolboy and L finding out who Kira is. It's not action-packed. Yeah, a lot of people die in it. But it's actually quite intellectual. It, you know, it poses philosophical questions. And it's meant to be thrilling in a more cerebral fashion, we'll say. Okay. So we just saw a Netflix trailer that came out three days ago.
It's going to be on Netflix?
Netflix.
Yeah, because Netflix is basically, they're making their own movie of it.
And basically, okay, yeah. It's unrecognizable.
What, is it white people?
It's white people.
Same thing with, you remember Dragon Ball Evolution? It was in the theaters?
Yeah.
Like, fuck, almost the same thing, where it was like...
fake-ass fucking Aaron Paul in it.
Oh, was he really?
No, it's not really Aaron Paul. It's the guy.
Aaron Paul.
Fake-ass Aaron Paul, which is like fucking Steve from that movie, that TV show, Shameless. He was like the main girl's boyfriend in like the first two seasons.
Oh.
He was the one who played Goku. And then they had the chick from the Real World San Diego, Ellie, what was her name? I forgot her name.
I don't.
She's the hot Korean chick.
Oh,
You know who I'm talking about, though, right? From the Real
World. Yeah, the Asian girl. Yeah, the hot I remember from Real World. Okay, yeah. And then she ends up in these minor bit roles.
Yeah, she was Ed Helms' wife in The Hangover, too.
Also, Evolution also has, what's her name, isn't it? The girl from
Shameless.
Shameless,
She plays Bulma.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A bunch of white people playing.
The names alone annoy me, right? Because I'm looking at these people, I'm going like,
Bulma. Well, Chow Yun-Fat was Master Roshi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was horrible also. Yeah. Chow Yun-Fat is...
No,
it doesn't make much sense. But you see it. I mean, it's not like I remember this text because I'm going, is it really that much of a surprise that
they're whitewashing?
You have a bunch of white people. It's like with Ghost in the Shell with
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, with my, and she's playing Kusanagi, right? Like, it's kind of a weird.
I actually watched that as a kid. Yeah. Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, those were some of the animes that we watched because there's a time where you could watch those animes from like Fist of the North Star was really popular around here. One.
Yeah.
There was Ghost in the Shell.
Evangelion was huge.
Yeah. And the aughts. Yeah, the early aughts.
Well, MTV would play like Aeon Flux.
Yeah.
That was an anime. Yeah.
Mustafa used to love that. Yeah. I couldn't follow Aeon Flux because it was always
after,
weird.
It was after Beavis and Butthead. So
I always felt slightly uncomfortable because it was like slightly naughty.
Yeah. But they had fucking Charlize Theron playing that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean,
they whitewash it quite a bit. Now, some people are pushing back on this, and they're going, well, Death Note's not being whitewashed. It's a American remake, blah, 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 blah. What they don't understand, though, about it is that Death Note is based in Japanese culture, right?
Things yeah.
Like the Shinigami, I mean, that's not an American folklore thing. No. How do you remake? It's one thing to remake something with already European or American folklore in it. It's like, if there's a Swedish film about vampires.
Yeah.
Let me in, right? Yeah. You can remake that because it's not too different. Vampires exist in American folklore. Shinigami?
No, that's not true.
There's like a whole thing about the Shinigami and apples that you just don't get unless you immerse yourself
in
Japanese mythos. And it's not just the Shinigami. From the school culture to the police culture to notions of crime, how are you going to have a white kid kill a bunch of black criminals? Think about it. Put it that way, right? Because what does he do? He purges criminals.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Are you serious? You're going to have a privileged little white fuck in Seattle?
Yeah.
This place takes place in Seattle. Oh, shit.
Think about that. You see what I mean?
Where Twilight is based.
Yeah. And Fifty Shades of Grey.
Which way it's not where Fifty Shades of Grey is. Is it?
I thought, isn't it?
I don't think it's based in Seattle.
I thought it's based out of Seattle because
it's based in New York.
Is it? I don't know, man.
Does it really matter?
Yeah,
I thought Seattle, it was like where films spin-off. Go to die.
I thought it was a Twilight spinoff.
It could end up being quite good. But what this fundamentally proves is that corporations are willing to just steal names. They're going to use the names and do their own thing. They don't give a shit. They're going to shit all over the source material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're going to use the names because they can exploit and capitalize on the fan base.
Yeah, I mean, people watch it.
That's what it is.
People now, now more than ever.
You'll still watch it. No problem.
And also, the movie Get Out just disproved the notion that you need to have white A-listers front-running your movies. Otherwise, well, no one will go and watch it. It's a marketing thing. No, it's not.
Yeah.
There's an interesting, we will get into this in another episode, but there's an interesting lash about, there's a lot of pokes about white liberalism in that movie, which I always appreciated as well.
Yeah, I haven't watched Get Out yet. I gotta watch
it. It's a great movie.
I heard it was amazing.
Yeah.
Fucking
did quite well. And Japanese anime, have you ever been a Japanese anime guy?
When I was a kid. So like when I was like 10 years old, I watched it a lot. So like it was just
this
around,
is a big place for it. Here.
Early 90s. So like I was actually kind of introduced to it kind of during its more golden era of when it was becoming more mainstream. And when I was doing research for this episode, I actually kind of got more specifically into where the term otaku came from.
Oh, why now?
Because it's important because otaku is references kind of what we are, right? This nerd geek type thing, right? But it has so much strong roots within Japanese culture. And there's actually a great paper that that I got most of my information from that really kind of describes otaku as something that the closest thing that we can describe it as is a nerd or a geek within American Western culture. Yeah. But it is very specifically Japanese because it has its roots based within the Japanese school system.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because it talks about kind of the social stratification within Japan. There's a certain level, especially like in the mid-80s, coming into early 90s, 1989 or so, where there is a really strong authoritative presence with adults, right? The kind of there's a need to kind of please them. There's also a need to be like, if you're not within kind of the ranks of the athletic or the good looking within school, you had to be smart because it's the only way that you'd get the proper job within society and that you'd be able to get married. If you weren't those things, then you were kind of considered lower class. So the caste system of the school would not really, you know, it was very, it's what he referred to as a vertical system, right? The only way to move upwards is by being one of these things, right? Being either incredibly smart and incredibly athletic or incredibly good looking. So Kaichiro Manakawa wrote an essay called Otaku / Geek for this from the Center of Japanese Studies at UC Berkeley.
Ooh.
Studying where this kind of otaku phenomenon came from, and
Ali
it started
likes,
with this
Ali
idea.
Likes this a lot more because you said UC Berkeley.
Yes, of course. Although we did have someone on here from Berkeley that, you know, that didn't quite turn out the same way as
we're. Just goes to show you, you can't educate everybody.
Yeah. The uncommon common man.
I love when he said that. It was so stupid. It was just so stupid.
So
carry on.
So was it a? Would you? Does he argue that it's a form of counterculture in some ways?
In very much so. But this is what's crazy about this and the originations of it. Right. Originally, otaku was counterculture. Mm-hmm. Anime was not associated with quote unquote geekdom. Right. Okay. The geeks of the time were more so ham radios, you know, models, little technological things. Right. Mm-hmm. Anime was counterculture. It was kind of cutting edge. Mm-hmm. Right. But with kind of the inception of a series like Macross, right, where what they did was they created a culture where the hero and who was fighting against things was kind of that nerdy, quiet guy who liked to tinker with his machines. Yeah, yeah. He became kind of the main focal point in those type of animes, right? Mm-hmm. So the cultures melded one another.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, eventually the people who were counterculture did not want to be associated with these nerds, right? So they left, and then these nerds stayed. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens later on in 1989 is something happens where it's called the Otaku Murders, right? Where this Japanese guy who basically would go and find girls anywhere between the age of 4 to 7 years old, he would murder them, he would desecrate the corpse, he would do all sorts of really fucked up things.
Oh, wow.
The big thing about the media at the time, though, was that when they had searched his house after they'd caught him, he had 4,000 some odd tapes of just anime of slasher films, and in there he would also have pictures of the girls that he'd murdered, curios that he'd taken from the bodies.
Holy
right?
Shit.
Keepsakes.
Yeah. They coined it the Otaku Murderer, though. Mm-hmm. So what happened was the otaku eventually, also through...
Kind of associated with that guy, though.
Kind of, yeah. And also through magazines, right? Because there's quotations that that we see through Japanese magazines where they literally describe the otaku. Otaku in and of itself is actually a derogatory comment. right, that they kind of co-opted. The idea being, though, it was associated with a person who was horrible in social situations, didn't understand culture, right, and who was so engulfed in the one thing that he was interested in that he couldn't socialize in any other way, mm-hmm. right?
Now, it's interesting. You see, this was in an 80s thing?
The
1989.
Yeah,
yeah. Late 80s, early 90s.
Counterculture. Because the emergence of not necessarily a nerd culture, but a subculture or subcultures goes much earlier than that in Japan. So Japan in the 1890s to the early 20th century, 1908 or so, has what's known as the Meiji Revolution or the Meiji Reformation.
Okay.
And this is kind of not unusual to Japan. Mm-hmm. This happened in a lot of places in the world, and it comes out of what is called the Great Divergence or post the Great Divergence. The Great Divergence is this moment in history that happens in the early modern era, roughly around the 17th, 18th century, in which the center of power and economic might goes from Asia, mm-hmm. right? The Chinese Empire, the Russian Empire, the Ottoman Empire.
Shifts west.
And it shifts to Europe, right? And suddenly Europe starts to colonize, or at least show up with these massive technological advancements. Uh-huh. And it's a shock to the system. In the Muslim world, this produces the pan-Islamist movement, like Al Afghani, who's like, oh, we need to adopt European technology while maintaining our culture. And Japan does the same thing. So the Meiji Reformation breaks down Japanese feudalism. The last shogun submits.
Okay.
And the Japanese imperial system is restored. Mm-hmm. And a centralization process happens under the idea that Japan, if it is going to survive, because we just saw these American ships, we just saw these British ships.
American ships?
Yeah, American ships.
When was this?
20th century.
Oh, okay.
20th century.
I thought you were talking about like
No. The Great Divergence happened in the 17th century. The Meiji Reformation happens
Later on. Yeah,
much later on. Late 19th, early 20th. Okay. Goes, we need to respond to this. If we're going to survive, we need to centralize. And so in order to centralize, we must adopt Western advanced modern technology mm-hmm. while maintaining Japanese culture. Out of this comes the kind of patriarchal culture that V's talking about, right? That solidifies for a period of decades, right? Mm-hmm. In which honor is about serving the family, in which you have to have a certain function in society, you have to be certain things, you have to be a bureaucrat, a businessman, etc. But also alongside that comes the emergence of capitalism. Mm-hmm. Right, and a particular aggressive form of capitalism. It's capitalism for the sake of the state, in order for the state to survive. So it's got this weird mercantilism element to it, or protectionism. Like, in order for this for Japan, mm-hmm. right, all for the sake of Japan to survive, we must industrialize. Yeah. Right, by the 80s, a counterculture emerges to respond to it. Right. But by the early 20th century, you have capitalism starting to take traditional Japanese elements of culture and creating industries around it. So something like hentai starts in the early 20th century because there's Japanese erotica. Well, like tentacle porn that comes out of hentai, is actually much older. There's Japanese scrolls that show squids sexually assaulting women. So you take these kind of older elements of Japanese culture and you make an industry about them. Anime comes out of a particular minimalist style of Japanese art. Uh-huh. And then capitalism comes around and goes, wait, there's an industry for this. And for the sake of Japan, we must industrialize. And so all of a sudden you have this explosion, and it's perfectly acceptable for you to be a wealthy, rich, adult businessman buying anime. Why? Because it is for the sake of Japan. You're improving the industry.
But here's the thing. Like, you brought up, like, tentacle porn and, like, hentai and shit. Yeah. So, like, as an American porn viewer, like, you see, like, weird porn from, like, Japan. Like, they have, like, sex game shows and things like that. Like, where, like, they have a girl pretending to be, like, you have to figure out which girl you're banging is your mom or, like, which one's your sister. Like, some weird shit that you see online for, like, Japanese porn. The thing about Japan is, like, their fetishes there, like, compared to ours, I mean, every country's got their weird fetishes, right?
Yeah.
Like, they, but Japan,
sister and mother fetishes are quite common in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, well, they have some really weird fetishes in Japan, like things like that. But the thing is, in Japan, the reason why they have all these weird fetishes and they're acceptable there, like, whereas over here, like, watching clown porn is not acceptable, whereas over there, it's like, yeah, you watch tentacle porn. Whatever you do in your private life is your private life. We don't judge you for it. Like, no one's going to look at you different because they keep their public, like, image completely different than their private image. So you won't see like PDA in Japan very often. Like try fucking making out with a girl in the middle of Tokyo. You'll have fucking like old people like staring at you like left and right.
But this also goes back to the notion of commodification, right? The market for it exists, right? Japan has accepted the notion of industrialization and commodification more so than I think any other country in the world, even in the United States.
They have some like,
so they go, look, there's a market for you to sell.
Literally, here's what some of the shit that they sell. They have fucking used panties and vending machines, right? They have weird scented oil. So they have like they call it the sister oil. Like it smells like it's supposed to remind you of your younger sister. And they have different like flavors. So like one's supposed to be like your aggressive sister. One's supposed to be like the nurturing sister. They have like pee smelling one. They have little boys' anus smelling ones. Yeah, they have all sorts of weird things. Like when I was looking this shit up, like thank God I was on private browsing because like.
So when we decided that we were going to talk about Japanese subculture,
he wants hentai.
I didn't watch any hentai. I looked up like weird fetishes they had in Japan.
I've never understood the incognito browser. It doesn't actually do anything.
I know, man, but it's like if someone else means
it doesn't shows up on your history.
It doesn't show up in my history.
Yeah. So if people happen to be on your computer looking stuff up, it won't just pop up.
Yeah, I don't want fucking little boy anus scented oils popping up anywhere.
Like, let's be real. Google still knows you looked up little boy.
I didn't. I looked up fucking Japanese fetishes.
So you know what's interesting is because again those things can be commodified. The positive effect of this. Have you ever gone to a Japanese grocery store? Their self-checkout is like 10 leagues ahead of ours. Everything they do is 10 leagues ahead of ours. Technologically, I mean, the notion of a vending machine. They have vending machines that do stuff here that we can only dream of.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? But on the same notion, it also produces these kind of acceptability of subcultures. So while there's this pushback against the counterculture in the 80s, what it eventually goes is, wait a minute, we can make money off of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And suddenly you have a production of multiple subcultures. There's a subculture of...
Your Marx is showing.
Yeah, a lot of Marx is showing today.
Yeah, your Marx is showing today.
But it's like there's a subculture in Japan about where you can go and visit a restaurant and the restaurants, all their waiters and everything are little schoolgirls.
Yeah.
And it's not meant to be, they're not escorts, they're not prostitutes. You're literally just going to hang out with schoolgirls. Everything about it, they sing songs, the placemats are colorful. Everything about it is meant to be a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the element of Japanese cuff culture is fantasy, right? The commodification of fantasy. Anime is the commodification of fantasy. It takes art, combines it with fantasy, and then it's like, we now have a market for it, and they try to sell it.
And this is where we really see that otaku thing come out again, because, it all originated from the school systems, right? Because the one thing that wasn't, that wasn't kind of this static class system within schools was school clubs, right? Because that, rather than having like a vertical hierarchy, it was what they would coin as a horizontal one, where it didn't matter what class you were in within school, if you had an interest, they would tailor to that interest, right? And it created like these like super fandoms.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in the otaku culture is that eventually it gets big enough, right? It gets nurtured enough that it may not be considered it's not considered mainstream by modern Japanese culture, but it's so big that it can't be denied. And
you're gonna distinguish though from otaku, right? Which is a specific moment emerging out of the school systems, right, to what's going on in broader Japanese society. Anime, from anime to toys, those are all mainstream.
Yeah,
they're subcultures, but they're all mainstream.
Yeah,
they're
sell like vibrating bras and shit.
But the difference is like otaku itself is a generalized term.
Uh-huh.
What they've done is you have to once you qualify otaku with something, that's what shifts it over, right?
And the subculture, the anime subculture, has moved beyond the school notions. In fact, it's also moved beyond what we would consider traditionally nerd. So now you have, when you look at anime subculture, you have the emergence of not the awkward geeky type, but the hunky male, particularly, generally, these are males that are slightly beautiful. They have a term, I think it's called Binoshen or Bioshen. It means beautiful boy.
Uh-huh.
They're men, often teenagers, schoolboys, that are beautiful in appearance. And more often than not, in manga, they have some type of romantic tension with another male. It's not sexually explicit. Now, what is that geared towards? You're talking about
South Park did an episode.
But what is that geared towards? These beautiful Japanese manga males who have slightly erotic...
Younger girls.
Towards younger girls, right? Yeah. Because it is the commodification of fantasy. What you have is this... You now have the anime subculture acting as a means by which young female girls, in the same way that boy bands do in the United States, act as a means by which sexuality can be expressed and understood and explored through. So what you have is this fascinating convergence of a much older process of industrialization and commodification merging with what you're talking about, right? Which is this counterculture movement that becomes nurtured in the school system to produce this diversity of subcultures in Japan that's quite unique. And not all of them are accepted. Not all of them are mainstream. Not all of them are okay, right? If you do certain, there's certain, if you participate in certain subcultures, you can't go telling your boss that you do that.
Yeah.
Right? But that's now bleeded over into, or bled over into the United States. I mean, with the Weibo, right? The, these white guys, generally middle class, who have similarities to the otaku, as you mentioned. They don't fit into the particular hierarchy of schools, right? They tend to be marginal. They tend to be, they tend to be on the outskirts, who now look to Japanese culture as a way of expressing themselves, finding common interests. They read mangas, they watch anime, they play Japanese games, they try to learn how to speak Japanese. And part of it also involves a sexual component, and that is the fetishizing of Japanese women.
So I have a friend that that
or Asian women in general.
Yeah, Asian women, they call it yellow fever. But I had a friend
offensively that,
Yeah, I had a friend who double majored in college in like English literature and then Japanese, and he spoke fluent Japanese. Like he would go to Japan. He had a really big thing for Asian women. And like,
or teaching English in Japan has become a very popular thing.
But like, you'll
post '90s,
you'll notice that it's a lot like you'll see a lot of white men that go towards like Asian women, but because like they've done studies where they've done like attractiveness, right, for like men and women, and Asian women usually land either at the top or close to the top, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Asian men are always like at the bottom ranked or towards low. They're ranked low. So like you'll see that, you'll see a lot of like interracial marriages with like white men and Asian women. That's really common nowadays. And
though we are starting to slowly see more white women and Asian men, they're not as common, but still.
So like the,
they're the least common.
The least common is Asian men and black women.
Yeah, that's the least common.
Yeah, so Asian men and black women are like the least married, like even amongst other, because like black men will marry out, and then like white men will marry out, white women will marry out, whereas black women and Asian men don't really marry outside of like their own race. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like when asked like why white men fetishize like Asian women, it's because they feel like sexually the Asian women will do more, but as
are more submissive,
but are more submissive and like more. Like,
you've never had an Asian girlfriend?
No.
I've dated an Asian woman before, but like no, they feel like they're more submissive in bed, and they'll do more, like they're more sexually like open, but when it comes to like other things, they're not, they're more submissive as a person in general. Like they'll listen more, they're more
but these are stereotypes. It's not actually,
but this is what they feel. This is why they have, but that attraction.
This is a kind of an older orientalist trope of the Asian, of the exotic Asian beauty, right? She's submissive, she's docile, she's whatnot,
but she's like a geisha and things like that.
The thing is, like, that older kind of trope is now being, is now emerging in a new way. It's reinscribed in a way, and part of this comes out of the fact of World War II, right? World War II, Vietnam War. The war in Korea. These, what happens is you have these soldiers that go over there, and then they bring stuff back with them, right? They bring snacks back with them. They bring food items back with them.
Karate.
They bring karate back with them, like, right? Taekwondo, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like most of the Taekwondo studios were actually not started by Koreans. Koreans were latecomers to Taekwondo studios in the United States. The Taekwondo studios that were started on the West Coast that became quite popular were more often not ex-soldiers.
I don't understand this. Fucking Taekwondo is the Korean art form of fucking knocking people off of horses.
Yeah, but white people started it. The Koreans, as they started to migrate, went, wait a minute, there's now this industry of Taekwondo. We can teach Taekwondo. But they weren't the first. The first Taekwondo people were generally...
Soldiers.
Soldiers, yeah. So They're bringing stuff back. Mm-hmm. Now, with the rise of globalization, internet culture, right? Because a lot of anime has existed in the 90s, but really it's the early 2000s when suddenly there's an explosion of Weibo anime culture. And what it does is it's the internet does it, and the fusion of Japanese culture and anime culture with our nerd culture.
Yeah.
Right? Which has always been there. And in many ways, we owe quite a bit to the mainstreaming of nerd culture and the reinvigoration of comic books and whatnot to what was the fusion with Japan. It's like a restaurant.
Yeah, it's Japanese
fusion.
Yeah,
you have Comic-Con. You can't go to Comic-Con now without seeing anime.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, what's that? And even the styles now. Lolicon, the Lolita complex, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The big breast, you know, girls.
Young girls.
Overly sexualized girls and that are young, that are extremely long, you wearing schoolgirl outfits, stuff like that.
Yeah. That ties right into what you were talking about.
I wanted to finish off just one more thing about the otaku thing. And this is important because kind of the brunt of the essay is talking about how people look at otaku and say the shifts in otaku would be anti-establishment, right? They would think that. But it is actually kind of considered to be a weak argument because otaku is all about kind of embracing and really kind of going to an extreme of things that are anti-establishment. The problem is, though, those things, just like any other thing that gets popular, eventually go mainstream, right? So as it goes mainstream, people see an outlet for which, you know, the culture industry can come in, right? Mm-hmm. And
that's an exploit term he's learned. Right?
Now, with that being said...
I can hear it. I
got it. By that point... Right, the people who are of this "quote unquote" otaku Japanese culture eventually leave because they, at their fundamental base, are meant to be anti-establishment. So the author actually makes a very interesting. He goes, the "quote unquote" otaku that we see now is not actually otaku; it's remnants of otaku, which is the people who kind of created the trend left because it mainstreamed, because it corporatized, and now they're trying to recreate another subculture as a result of it. And with that being said, we're going to be seeing more emerging ones, but the ones that emerge that are popular enough for us to know about them at that point will no longer be otaku anymore. It's kind of that weird, it's a really interesting argument.
Japan's also quite fascinating in regards to, because most places develop subcultures vis-a-vis ethnic diversity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So subcultures in the United States predominantly emerge out of are not market driven often, right? In fact, the broader cultures, things like boy band culture, pop, are very market driven. They're not subcultures. They're mainstream, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody loves Taylor Swift. Everyone loves One Direction, right? Yeah. They're your mentor, right? But subcultures exist because of immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Puerto Rican subculture, Cuban, Chinese, Vietnamese, etc., right?
Korean.
And these mixing and intermingling produces
subcultures.
Yeah.
In the same way that the Japanese becomes an import culturally into the West Coast and into our nerd culture. Japan, in many ways, has produces a different type of subcultures. It's predominantly class-based and market-driven. Yeah. Right, they're produced because there's a market for it, or because there's some way of commercializing it, and that's because Japan is actually one of the more racially homogenous countries in the world. In fact, it's most of, ironically enough, white supremacists in the United States now have picked up that the two nations that they always point to when they go, "We want a white country," are Israel, which is an ethno state, and Japan, which is somewhat of an ethno state.
Yeah, it's very frowned upon for like interracial marriages in Japan.
Well, yeah, I mean the
Brazilians
have the largest migration is with Brazil, right? So there, once slavery ended in Brazil, there was a huge market for labor, and so the Japanese migrated to Brazil quite a lot. But they always view Japan as their home, not Brazil. And many of them return, and they're not considered Japanese anymore. They're called Dekasagi, right? Which means people away from their home.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dekasagi are Japanese, but who come from Brazil. And it's quite an offensive term, right?
You'll see like Mario Yamasaki, Lyoto Machida.
So these are, the idea is like they need to go back. There's even a government program in which they will pay immigrants to leave.
Oh, shit.
Right? Because they want to, and because it's that racial homogeny, you have to have, there's different ways of exploring diversity. Now, some of that, what happens is that you're left with a sort of incestuous culture, mm-hmm. in which what all the kind of old traditions have to be remade because nothing new is coming in. And so Japan becomes this kind of fascinating place in which it's highly traditional, but extremely modern, more modern than we are, mm-hmm. more modern than the United States is. The embracing of technology and commercialization and capitalism yeah. and advertisement. I mean, a lot of our actors actually go over there to film ads that we yeah, never see, then, yeah. right? For weird products that we yeah. never use, but because there's a market yeah, for it.
Yeah, you've seen some so fucking weird Schwarzenegger ads.
Subcultures in Japan come out of this kind of unique Japanese experience of homogeneity, of social reformation that happens in the 20th century and the response back to it. But the problem is this. This isn't just about counter-reformations or counter-cultures. This is now a market-driven...
Yeah. It's content industry.
Yeah. Capitalism. This is all yeah, about creating subcultures and appealing to everyone's fantasy, fetish, etc. Which is why you have sexual fetishes, you have explorations of sexuality from things like Lolita images, yeah. right? To
technical porn.
To the Bioshen or Binoshen, right? Yeah. These beautiful males.
Oh, that's yaoi or boys' love. Yeah,
which yeah. is meant to be specifically geared towards women. To even just...
Bukkake.
Just knowing that there is a culture around the art of anime, right? Because you can be a participant in anime subculture without necessarily being part of the broader nerd culture, right? And in the United States, that was brought about predominantly through movies like, what, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away.
Yeah, so basically the Miyazaki movies.
The Miyazaki movies yeah. really brought anime to the U.S. Yeah. in a mainstream fashion. So what's happening in Japan, that the mainstreaming of that already happened, is slowly happening over here too. Mm-hmm. Comic-Con, yeah. right? Originally a comic convention, really niche, really nerdy, now is the most popular media
yeah.
convention of all time.
It's also originated in Japan.
Yeah, right? Also not convention. Technically even a comic con anymore. No. Right? So movies are there. Everything is there.
Yes, sir.
And anime. And porn. Of course, V would know quite a bit. There's all sorts of anime conventions going on all the time.
Incidentally, in 2 weeks, I will be in Houston, Texas for Anime Matsuri. Yeah. So come by and check me out.
There you go.
We got on our crazy Japan file.
Yeah. Diz, why don't you take it?
What did you? Was that yeah, a karate move?
Chopped it. Yeah, you did.
I'm racist.
You're the worst.
I know. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy. We're on Twitter @currentlynerdy. Instagram, currentlynerdy on there as well. Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. YouTube, look out for a new YouTube video coming out. You could just search currentlynerdy and you'll find us on there. We are on Stitcher Radio now. So if you haven't heard, we're on Stitcher. Mm-hmm. So please tell your friends to listen to us on Stitcher. And as always, we're on iTunes. Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, please. If you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at AAOLOMI. Please go follow me. I do love chatting and interacting with all of you. You can also catch me on my website at AliAlomi.com. Diz.
You can find me everywhere at Dizbola. No one sent me nudes last week. I'm really upset.
Please don't send him nudes. For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you. Long time.